Ever since his return to duty after a protracted nervous breakdown, Maitland Allen, our deputy librarian, had seemed reluctant to grant any access to the rare books which were in his charge. So I was completely taken by surprise when, after asking to see an early Italian book, he'd answered, "Come, and I'll show you the whole collection." Was this simply a piece of unexpected good fortune, or had the old man some ulterior purpose? Leading the way to the rare book room, Allen ushered me in. "There they are," he said, pointing to one of the stacks. "The whole collection. A frightening collection. The book you want happens to be there, but it's a stranger there. As for the others, I hate them." And his voice rose nervously as if in emphasis. Well, I walked over to the stack, but I noticed that Allen stood aside. And having found the volume I wanted, I began to look at the rest. They were all works of the late 15th or early 16th century, a priceless collection. But every work was on the same theme. I said, turning towards Allen, "They're all on black magic and necromancy. Who on earth collected all this devilry?" "An unfortunate young man whose history you know as well as I do," answered Allen. "John, 3rd Earl of Gowrie. When he became a law student at Padua, after studying here, he was said to have dabbled in magic. Well, here's his library, or part of it. And I wish it had never survived." And again I noticed this nervous pitch in his voice. So I replied lightly, "Well, if he did dabble in the black art, he must have found it pretty ineffective." Allen turned on me. "Ineffective? I wish to God you were right. Do you see that safe over there? It contains another of Gowrie's books. No one knows it's there but myself, and now you. Listen to me. You must listen to me. The book in that safe does work. I ought to take it and throw it deep into the sea, but I can't do it. I'm afraid. It's only one small book, but it is evil itself. That book throttles the man who dares to open it." I looked at him in blank amazement. "Whatever do you mean?" I asked. "I wish I knew. All I can tell you is that two men who have looked into that book have both been throttled to death." After a moment, he went on. "This collection came to us towards the end of the war. It came from the local antiquarian society. It had been in their possession, apparently forgotten and virtually lost for a century and a half, ever since Gowrie House was pulled down in 1805. There's a story that in the course of that demolition, the books were discovered in a wall closet which had been panelled in and so lost to sight. And that may well be so. Perhaps Gowrie himself had become afraid and had put one particular book with all its fellows into a hidden closet, as I have put that one particular book into a safe. Perhaps he too was afraid to do the one thing that he ought to have done and that I ought to have done. For no one can open that book and still live. First it was Fraser. He was our professor of chemistry before you came. As soon as this collection arrived, he was in here day after day with his notebook, working out the formula, he used to say to me. Some of them are quite interesting. But one day he read too much. I'd been working elsewhere that afternoon, and I didn't come back here until nearly closing time. When I came in, Fraser didn't nod to me with his usual smile. Instead, as he looked up at my entrance, I saw that his face was white and drawn. "My God, Allen," he said to me, "this book is the devil himself. It should be burned, burned to ashes." He got up from his chair and he seemed to recover himself a little. "Look," he said, "I'm putting it
in here, in this empty case. Now lock it in, and let no one ever read it again. And he stood to that wire-fronted case over there and thrust the book in and waited for me to lock the door with my master key. He seemed to stumble as he went out of the room. I remember that only too well. But that very night, he was found dead in his own room in the lab. He had a queer kind of a lab coat, which he was very proud of. It was rather like an old-fashioned smock, tied by a fancy cord round the neck. And when he was found, that cord had been drawn so tight that it had throttled him. And his students were sure, absolutely sure, that he had been alone in that room. His death was a mystery, until suddenly, maybe a fortnight later, I knew the truth. Now, don't ask me how I knew it, but I knew that Fraser had been killed by the devilry of that book. And frightened as I was, I still had the courage to do one thing. Unknown to the rest of the staff, I removed from the library catalogue all the entries relating to it. No one should read that book again. No one should even know of its existence. Had I dared, I would have burned it. As Fraser had said, it should be burned, but I couldn't bring myself to touch it. I was afraid of it. And so young Ingalls had to die. Unluckily, I had been off for a few days with influenza, and during my absence, Ingalls had been told to check part of the catalogue. You can imagine my horror when, on the day of my return to duty, I found him here, sitting and holding the book in his hand, open and reading it. And as soon as he saw me, he called out, "Here, I found an incunabulum which isn't in the catalogue." I rushed up and seized the thing from him. I shoved it back into the case and relocked the door. Well, he looked at me open-mouthed. So I made some feeble excuse, which I know he didn't believe, and sent him off. And then I sat down at the table there, and I felt sick and faint. What could I do to save him? Nothing. I knew that he was doomed. He didn't escape. When the library was closing that night, the porter found that the automatic lift wouldn't work, and naturally he assumed that someone had failed to shut one of the lift doors. And he went to look. He found the door that wasn't shut, all right. He found Ingalls, trapped by the outer door and trapped by the neck. Almost as though he'd gone into the lift, and then, just as the door was sliding to, had put out his head to look at something. I tell you, the pressure of those lift doors is so light that you can hold them back easily with one finger. And yet Ingalls was dead, throttled by the light pressure of a lift door. Can you wonder that I had what was called a nervous breakdown? I was away for over a year. As you know, I've only been back for a month or so. Oh, probably you think I'm mad or suffering from delusions. Yet I was the only person who knew that Ingalls had opened the book. I was the only person who knew that Ingalls was doomed to die, just as Fraser had died. Oh, God, forgive me, I should have destroyed the thing, but I couldn't bring myself to touch it. Yet today, I summoned up courage to move it out of the bookcase and lock it away in that safe. And there it lies, alone. But I'm still afraid. The next morning, Wallace, one of our lecturers and Alan's next-door neighbour, knocked on my retiring room door and came quietly in. "I came to tell you that Maitland Allen died last night."
"Died?"
I repeated.
"Yes. All very strange. Last night his housekeeper heard him in his study walking up and down and repeating, 'I will do it, I will do it.' And then she heard him go out into the hall. Peeping round her door, she saw him put on a cap and his scarf and his overcoat and literally rush out of the house. Well, by this time she was pretty alarmed and she came and knocked on our door. And my wife thought she was so upset that, well, in the end I offered to go in and wait up with her for Alan's return.
He didn't come back until nearly 2 o'clock this morning. And as he shut the front door, we heard him give a queer kind of a strangled cry. We rushed out into the hall and saw him half hanging from the door and half sprawled on the rug in the hall. One end of his scarf had become trapped in the door when he'd shut it, and when he'd turned round, the scarf had caught him by the neck. Well, we opened the door at once and released him, but when we tried to help him to his feet again, we found to our horror that he was dead. I came over to tell you because I... But I was no longer listening. Fraser, Ingalls, and now Alan. How could it be mere coincidence? And yet, how could Alan's tale be true? At the Procurator Fiscal's inquiry into the cause of death, a boatman stated that Alan had knocked him up at midnight and had asked to be rowed a full mile out to sea. At first the man had demurred because, well, he said that Alan seemed fair demented, was the phrase he used, but an offer of £5 had persuaded him. He'd rowed Alan out to sea, and when he told him that they were well beyond the full mile for which he'd asked, Alan had suddenly plucked a small book from his overcoat pocket and hurled it down into the water with all his force. And then, said the boatman, he crouched down in the boat, as though he were afraid someone was going to hit him. And he stayed like that, like tied up again. And then he jumped out of the boat and ran along the quay as if old Nick himself were chasing him. Well, the doctors were puzzled but unanimous. Despite the softness and natural elasticity of the scarf, they'd been surprised to find a sharp mark round Alan's neck. But they were convinced that he had died of shock. They said his heart was in poor condition and that any shock would probably be too much for it. A shock? I knew only too well what would flash through that poor wretch's mind when he felt that sudden, unexpected tightening of his scarf round his neck. So much I had written down a week ago when my mind was free. But how different it is today. Today, all Alan's fear and dread are my own. Today, at the close of the library committee, our librarian mentioned that when checking the rare book room, he had found inside the safe a book from the Gowrie collection, but one which, to his surprise, had no entry in the catalogue. I found my way back to my room, a prey to every wild imagining. Can it be that Alan, deranged and overwrought on that fatal night, cast the wrong book away? How could he? There was only one book inside the safe. Yet how can a book return from the bottom of the sea? And what can I do? Already our librarian has handled it and opened it.
The Work of Evil by William Croft Dickinson was read by Moultrie Kelsall and presented by the BBC.